Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Welcome. Here's a song. John's on the line. Don's not. Okay, John, how are you doing tonight?
Hello, Hammer. Can you hear me?
We preempted the John Yoder Hour for Madonna and JT, Justin Timberlake.
Actually,
now,
a good choice. I like JT.
I love that song. We only got 4 minutes to change the world. How are you tonight?
By the way, actually quite good. I spent 4 hours this afternoon or more talking to a homeless person. You actually would love her. Her name is Jan. She's a writer, very intellectual. She's working on a literary piece. She's won some awards, I guess, in her past life. Had some incredible circumstances. You know, devastating stuff. She was basically poisoned by Monsanto. And at the time, she had money.
Who's
that? So she spent $250,000 detoxing herself over 2 or 3 years. Literally, she's like, you know, spent half her time crawling on the ground, you know, with being poisoned because the stuff got into her bone marrow. And, you know, your body just replicates this stuff. It's just terrible.
What is Monsanto?
Well, you know, Monsanto, the chemical company, I guess she lived in an area where she, I don't know, some accident happened where she got splattered with Roundup and some other combinations of chemical. I didn't get the full story, but you know, when you deal with homeless people, and there's two kinds of homeless people. You know, there's the kind that talk to themselves, and they've done too much drugs, and they almost deserve to be there. I mean, they're destined for it, I guess is what I'm saying. And then you have other people. They're like you and me, or you know, or they're educated, or they got, you know, they had a life and something traumatic happened, but they're not homeless in their mindset, only in their circumstance.
Yeah,
so
I saw a lady. Mm-hmm, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I saw someone on TV saying that she was in a shelter temporarily. Now she has her own business. She was actually a talking head on CNN, and she just needed temporary help.
Right. And so that's the kind of deal. She knew a lot of stuff about the homeless community here in Venice. And what was interesting, here's a side note, call it earth-shattering news. You know Charlie Sheen, the hedonistic party animal of Hollywood?
Yes, but has he changed lately?
Well, here's a little tidbit you could maybe post on there to get more ratings. Chucko apparently every day feeds 150 people that are homeless. Not necessarily that he's had a Jesus conversion, but apparently he's finding a lot of satisfaction in just helping people and doing good stuff instead of just, you know, I'm taking drugs and banging women and, you know, I'm wild man Charlie Sheen. There's a certain aspect in his life, him and a couple other celebrity people, like, I'm here, I'm privileged, I have extra money, I should be helping those who are unfortunate. And a lot of people don't know this, but yeah, every day 150 people off of like Lincoln and Venice in that area, he feeds them every day. Has a chef come out and make special meals just so they get really good stuff, not crappy food either.
Wow, that's fantastic. Don is on the line. I'm just acknowledging it because I was kind of bugging him to call in. So I'm really proud to hear that, John, and we're going to reel Don in first.
I mean, isn't that crazy? My first response is, no way. Charlie Sheen, you're
Don,
kidding.
I believe it because a lot of celebrities have good hearts. So what if their lifestyle's a little messed up? It doesn't mean that they don't have a philanthropic bone in their body.
True, but we should let Don talk a little bit. I'm talking too much.
No. I just got in. You guys are, I don't even know what you're talking about except for the fact we'll be working on something like that exact here in Reno, where we're looking at possibly little container neighborhoods for the homeless so that we can get them off the street. We've already started with Catholic Charity Services here in Northern Nevada, getting a couple of hotels, old hotels, and the working poor will be moving in there for basically a temporary situation, but we're looking for the homeless families to put in possible container homes so that they can be off the street. But other than that, we do have a soup kitchen that was closed down, and we had chefs, cooking the meals for them, but they closed it down for safety reasons. For no reason, really, the city council. But we're working on possibly bringing back, or what we're also looking at is possibly getting food truck or two and going more or less to the homeless.
Wow.
Good job. That's a big problem in this country. Even Duluth has homeless families. I tutored a girl who was staying in a shelter. She had been kicked out of foster care.
Well, I have to say, I'm kind of, you know, I'm a jaded person because I've spent a lot of my life helping disadvantaged people, and I still do. But there is a certain mental attitude that sometimes, you know, rules my mind, and it's kind of like a lot of homeless people on the street, it's like they kind of put themselves there, or they make the decisions in life that the natural conclusion is to be on the street. I think we're seeing a new era where there's just people trying the best they can, and there's just, you know, it's kind of like musical chairs. There's five chairs of job and opportunity, and there's 20 people in the room trying to sit on those five chairs. And I've seen some really innocent people get just obliterated. And so I see a big
I don't think
now.
You can categorize it, John. Every situation is different. And
no.
Well, when
John,
you talk
that's
to the
not
person,
true. Not everybody deserves to be there. Nobody knows exactly how someone got in that situation. And
but
Laura,
John just made John just made an extremely salient point that not all the homeless want to have homes. A lot of them are, that's just the way their lifestyle is, but there is a huge mental health issue that's going on, that's being untreated throughout the country. And that's,
right, like
that's
if you
that's a
if
homeless
you were to take,
problem.
Right, like if you were to take, well, let's say, go down to L.A., go down to Mission, go down to the Skid Row, and you take, you know, a couple hundred people out there, or a couple thousand, even the ones that had just got there, and you put them in a house with a job, I'm telling you, within a month, they'd lose the job, they'd be doing drugs or do some crazy-ass thing that would get them kicked out of the house. I'm just saying that's their mentality. They're not going to give in to anyone. They're not going to listen to the man or rules or limits. They're going to be their own thing. And it's okay. They welcome the, I'm going to be out in the street and just do my thing, and I hate the world. And I'm just saying that's not everyone. But I'm saying that's a great majority of people out there. You can't help them. You try. I tried. They don't want that. They don't want structure and rules and spirituality. They just don't want to be
nope.
accountable.
Exactly. And that makes up a big, big part of not only the homeless population, but also the prison population. They're one and the same. A lot of the homeless are ex-cons, people who've never been able to get back on their feet once they were off. And so they're already, I would have to say, the prison population, and this is only in my estimation, has to be probably 20%, close to 18 to 20% mentally ill. And that's something that the homeless, it's a direct correlative of that.
And what's the cure? Just better drugs or spiritual awakening?
No,
you know, I don't feel at liberty I don't feel at liberty to talk about this subject right now because I'm running for office, but I do have some friends in L.A. that were homeless. One was due to spouse abuse, and
right.
she ended up getting Section 8 for 3 years, but then she gave it up because she wanted to move back to Riverside County to be near her friends and best friends. So some people have to wait 10 years for Section 8 in L.A., and
right.
she got it while she was in a shelter, but then she gave it up 3 years later, which I thought was a bad move.
It probably was, but she doesn't care.
Well, then she got a job as a pharmacy tech. It was making $38,000 a year. And then a couple
exactly.
years later, she had a mental breakdown and didn't go back in that field. And then she got two minimum wage jobs like a year after that. She moved in with her boyfriend, who I don't know if she ever loved him. And then she just moved into him for security. And then she ended up getting two minimum wage jobs later on.
Okay, and does that mean she's homeless or what?
No, she's still living with her boyfriend, but I don't want to put it like this, but basically once she found that boyfriend, to me it seems like she played the wannabe wife card. Like she pretended to have a breakdown, and then so she could sponge off him, and then he got an inheritance, and she didn't really need to work, but I think he wanted her to work, but their relationship was going downhill. But they're still together, and I don't know. It just seems like a lose-lose situation.
I think so in a lot of those cases, people I don't know if it's just the way they're raised. I don't know if they just think math classes, if their parents teach certain values. But I'll give you an example. Let's say, okay, I'm working at Jack in the Box, and I'm making, say, $7 an hour, and it's 40 hours a week. That's $180 times four. It's going to be what?
$280.
John,
your phone is messed. Is your phone on speaker, John?
Oh, it is, but, you know, I can call in on a landline.
Well, I mean, could you just take it off speaker? Because it's getting too fuzzy.
Okay, you know what? It would actually be, I wouldn't be able to hear much of anything. It's a terrible speech. Let me call back in. How about that?
Okay, sorry about that.
Are you sure it's John's phone?
Yes, I'm positive.
What? Okay, then how come you got to call? Finish your story.
Oh, I'm calling in right now.
Okay.
Stay on the other line first and finish your story. I wasn't going to cut you off. But while you guys are talking. Yeah, I'm going to pull you in now, John, just a minute.
Okay,
here you are. You're live on your land phone.
Okay, so am I better now?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, good. Okay, so what I was going to say in the scenario here, it totally wiped my brain blank for a second. We were talking about simple mathematics. Okay, so say, you're making basically under $1,200 a month after they take out the tax, it's under $1,000. So a person goes, I'm making $1,000 a month and I'm working at Jack in the Box. Typical scenario, right? And they go, well, my rent is $600, and my food is $200 or $300, and I have car insurance, and this is blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of, I make $1,000, and I spend $975 a month. And you go, and you think you're okay? Really? What happens when your car breaks? What happens when you have to go to the doctor? What happens when your girlfriend gets pregnant? All this stuff, it's like you don't have a plan here. You need to make $2,000 or $3,000, especially if you're going to raise a family. And the point is, there's a simple economics thing that's just of reality that's not going on. And by the way, how long are you going to work at Jack in the Box? And what happens if you lose that job? Where are your skills to get another one? So I think a lot of this stuff, like you're mentioning, kind of blanket statement. Well, she lived with her boyfriend. Okay, well, how much was she saving money while this guy's paying for all her other stuff? Was she really forwarding her career?
I get the drift, but I just want to bring this conversation to light. The topic, Don, I think it's...
Well, I was getting excited. This is reality.
It's not John's phone. It's not John's phone. It's Don breathing.
Well, that's because he's got the gun. He'd be breathing heavy, too,
What the heck is he talking about?
You're breathing like a wounded coyote.
I'm not even breathing.
A homeless coyote.
I'm not even breathing, though. I'm sitting here.
Okay.
Well, actually, I'm making a smoothie. And
this is what it sounds like.
Well, that's pretty exciting there.
I don't know if I've ever sounded like that before. That's the first time I've ever sounded like
that
in my
life. Can you increase the intensity of those sounds?
I guess so.
I answered the phone. Jesse Ventura's political campaign today, and Don wanted to order steroids from me.
Well, that's okay.
So the subject tonight is, are we gonna conform to the status quo? Do we have the power to change one person's mind? Or if we can't, can we enlighten them? And also Kanye West's pathetic speech at the VMAs tonight. And at the end of his speech, he announced he's running for president in 2020.
Why not now?
He's
going to have
shot.
To.
Yeah.
And everybody's, every politician has to lose once to understand the dynamics of politics.
I mean, what's his Twitter following?
Might as well lose now.
Who's got 20 million Twitter followers? I mean,
Kim Kardashian, his wife was at the VMA.
Yeah.
She has the most.
And
in
his
the
mother,
whole country.
Bruce Jenner. as her mother's
she could be like the
Jeter.
Vice president running mate with him, maybe?
No, at his mother's.
If they
Bruce
become
Jeter.
President, I'm definitely. His, you
no,
want
you're
to know
not
what
definitely
his
20, doing anything.
You know what
you're
his 20-minute speech was about tonight? He won
no,
the Vanguard Award. His 20-minute speech, he held 100,000 people's attention with apologies over how he treated Taylor Swift 5 years ago when CeeLo lost the Album of the Year. It was so self-involved, it was pathetic.
He was
what do you mean? Why would
racial...
people look at that? Why don't you have some? Why don't they go out and exercise and eat some the right dinner or something for once? These people are pathetic. Kanye West
they
is
are.
Pathetic. Caitlyn Jenner is pathetic. All these people are pathetic. Come on now.
I thought he was mending racial bridges with Taylor Swift.
Kanye, Taylor Swift is a goat. She's a ghost. She's so transparent. She's not. She's not even discernible.
She's a ghost.
Is that Taylor
goat?
Swift? No. Is that Taylor Swift? No. That's Casper the Friendly. Casperina, the friendly ghost.
You could fit two Taylor Swifts inside of one Britney Spears?
Uh-huh. Yep. That's a really nasty concept, but yeah. You
want to hear something terrible?
We
there
just
was
heard
only,
it.
There's only two.
Swift.
There's only two.
What?
She's going to exceed it right now.
There was only two good performances. Lauren Kelly and Justin Bieber. I swear to God, they
okay.
were the only two good performances of the night.
Well, who cares?
He says he's changed his life.
Who, Justin Bieber or,
the
or Justin Timberlake?
He
or
says
whoever
he's reforming. He's learned from
what do you mean?
Past.
He's got to. You can't get any worse than three prison terms and, you know, ready to get some felonies. If you can't get it, you have to get better than that, or else you're spending the rest of your life in jail.
Is he going to get some tattoos removed? The Beeb?
Why?
The Beeb cried on stage tonight, and he broke down and cried.
Because he was making excuses to Taylor Swift, too.
No,
everybody's
he was...
Making,
he got
Taylor,
emotional.
I'm sorry, too. He got emotional because of why?
He didn't perform for over 5 years. He has a new hit out, and I just think he got emotional. I don't know why.
Oh, I think it was his period.
It could be. Maybe he's doing his transgender preparation.
Yeah, he's preparing for it. Nobody wants to throw eggs at their neighbors without preparing.
You know, I have to say, though, something about if you look up the stuff he did when he was like 10 or 11 or however old he was, he's pretty good for that level, and I think it's one of those things, you know, when you have a kid that peaks like he's 12 years old and he's the best little league pitcher or whatever, you know, the thing is, there's some kids like they peak at a certain, and when they get to high school or college, they don't get any better, like everyone passes them up. I just feel he's like that. It's like he's never, to me, been more impressive. He was very impressive as a young kid, running around with his little guitar, going to radio stations and singing and all. It just felt like he never got any better than that.
You know what? He actually did really good tonight with his dancing and his singing. I thought he was
okay,
fantastic.
So he cried because he was happy.
Yes.
He cried because he was
I've
happy.
Never seen it. I've never seen a live performer shake that many hands on stage.
But he's hanging around black people, too, so he's learning how to dance.
Right.
I missed a couple performances.
I have to ask the question, though, of Don, and, you know, and I'm not trying to be racist. I just want to see if
sure
he has any input into
it.
This. And that is, I dog sit, right? It's a golden retriever. It's not a really big golden retriever. It's about 55 pounds. You know, most of them, a lot of them are like 70 pounds and 80 pounds. And, you know, they're mine almost looks, the one I dog sit for, it almost looks like a toy compared to them, the miniature version. Point is, white people love the dog. White, I mean, gals, women, kids, whatever, they all come up, got to touch the dog. I'm trying to keep the dog away from them. I don't want the dog to, you know, maybe by accident, like think it's plain, or you know, scratch the kid or jump up on the kid or whatever, right? Asians love the dog, take pictures of the dog. The only ethnic group that has a problem is the sisters, not even the brothers. Brothers, it's the sisters. They'll walk up, and usually not young, but it's more like in the 45-year, 55-year-old. I mean, literally, they will. It's 50-50. They will literally, like, turn their face and, like, try to walk away, or they'll go walk along the wall and kind of put their hand up, like, almost covering their face. Like, have you been attacked by, you know, white people will sick their dogs on you? Or I don't understand. Now,
they're scared of dogs, period.
They're just scared
of
dogs.
Keep on going. They're scared of dogs. Black women, I mean, you got to understand some of the dynamics of blacks. To wit, swimming. We are averse to swimming because there is somewhere in our conscious or unconscious, we remember, or some of them remember, because I swim like a fish, but some of them remember the ships that had to come over, and this is, you know, been taught to them by their grandmothers and
great-grandmothers. That would make sense. So it's not crocodiles in Africa going after them. It's the boats of slaves. They've heard these stories.
Right.
It's traumatic.
And so,
okay.
And so there is an aversion to dogs because dogs were the slave master's means of
herding people.
Patrolling.
Patrolling.
Patrolling. You know, if you're out at night and you're supposed to be in the house, the dog's going to bark.
Dog's
going to
bark.
Get the hell in there, or you got 50 lashes in the morning or that
See,
night.
That actually makes sense. I mean, I actually go, yeah, that would make some sense because I mean, it's weird. It's like obvious. It's almost like I almost have to comfort. Like, it's okay, dog. You know, I will not. Dog loves
right.
black people. I will. The owner is a brother. You know, it's like it's okay. He won't. She won't bite you. Trust me. It's like
right.
I'm not fully white anyway. So you can trust me on this. I'm part minority here. We'll work this out. So no, this makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's a part of it because, for the most part, the dog is the patrol, and when there is when you're out doing whatever you're not supposed to be, beef.
And the brothers are cool because they're kind of alpha male, and a lot of them identify with pit bull
right.
and in the hood having a dog and all
that
kind of
stuff.
That's
the whole point.
It's not so much the younger gals, but it's like the older set, the 45 to 50-ish kind of. I mean, it's like it's almost like terror. I mean, literally, like or like oh, I know they're vocally want to say like get that dog away from me, you know.
Right.
Doing anything, and some of them, they'll be in a pack. There'll be two or three gals walking out of El Torito, because as you walk the dog by El Torito, that's usually where it happens. And they'll come out, and one of them will be, oh, come on, it's just a dog. I just don't want to be around the dog, you know. It's like,
okay,
it's
well, for the
dog.
Most part, yeah, we kind of get it. It's not just the dog, though. There, I mean, they
it's
would do it if
fear.
The dog on poodle.
Yeah,
if it was a poodle, they'd be running down the streets crying for mommy. I'm talking about old, you know, mature, supposedly black women, and they'll cry. You know, they'll just sit there crying.
They get very emotional. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, you've got a lot of things that that blacks are very, very fearful of because they're the leaders or they're the people
and,
that they
and more demonstrative,
are slave to.
Like in the hood, you know, and I don't care what people say, but when I visit Sonny and his other friends in the hood, and we're in the house, and you hear some people talking two blocks away or half a block away, it's like it's the brothers and the sisters talking. It's just, I mean, they're loud. I went to a black church once, and I sat down in the back row. I remember this was like I was about 25 years old, and it was funny. It was one of those churches with like 25 people, and when the choir got up to sing, 20 of them were in the choir. So like four or five people sitting, still sitting. They get up on stage, and they had no microphones, only the pastor did, and they were so loud. I was in the back seat. It was hurting my ears how loud they were. They were belting.
That's the That's a couple of reasons. Again, it is from history where blacks had to yell across the aisle or yell across loud areas for anybody else to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
So it, and also, like anybody, they crave attention. We, you know, crave attention. And that's why we're such great entertainers, things like that.
Right.
And,
I mean, how many white people actually, you know, especially girl singers, sound like a black chick? There's a couple, but it's pretty rare. And same thing with,
did I,
you know,
open it?
It's just like,
yeah,
you know, to get the tonality, you know. And it's just same thing, like Asian singers, they sing, have a different tonality than white singers do. It's very interesting. It's, you know, a lot of times people almost call it in denial. It's like, if skin color is different, voices can be different. It's not a problem. Hair can be different, you know, but height
can be different. That's why they call it soul, because, you know, and I talk with this with black males whenever I talk to them, and we all have the same understanding that blacks are, you know, they're the kings and queens of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand it. The black men know that. We just are in a time in history that is that's been turned around, or you can call it
a little downtime here,
whatever.
But...
yeah, and it'll take a couple hundred years to get out of it. But we all know our rightful place in the world, and that's on top. So we're just kind of biding our time, enjoying whatever it is that we've got in this time in history, so that we can prepare ourselves for what comes up next. And
right.
That's what I tell everybody, is that the main thing black people want is for the leaders to teach them what they know. I've mentioned this before on the show, because we black leaders want a peaceful transition when the time comes, and it will come. So the only thing that we want from whites, we don't want their jobs, and we don't necessarily want their money. We don't want their position. That's why we go out, black men, and go out and pretty much commit suicide by just killing police.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. You know, we don't care, because this is not a good earth we're on right now. This is ungodly. This is the start of Revelation. This is the, you know, apocalypse. So
it is pretty dark time.
It's a pretty dark time, and it's not because of blacks. It's not because of Indians. It's not because of Mexicans. It's not because of any of those minorities. It's because of one race, and they are an oppressive, idiotic, and ignorant lot. And that's the whole point, is that they don't understand that they're really pretty stupid. So black men are just sitting around, you know, playing cards and smoking pot and just doing whatever they do, because we realize that there's going to be a time, maybe not even in not so distant future, that, you know, we don't have a half white president. We have a fully black president.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be possibly coming sooner than later, because whites are pretty much absolving their power, because they know that they don't have it. They only have the capability of making machines, and those machines can only take them so far. They still need their own mental prowess, and they don't have it.
Well, an interesting dynamic that you see, and I'm just speaking from experience, when I was like 30 years ago, I'm 56, so even 40 years ago, when I was a teenager growing up, if you ask the average white gal, and when your conversations would come up, like white teenage girls, you know, would you date a black man? I would say probably 1 out of 10, maybe 2 out of 10, would say yeah. And then the other 8 or 7 out of 10 would be like, ugh, or no way, you know. And I would say now, and these are among, you know, peers of women that are in their 30s, 40s, and 50s even, it's kind of 50 to 60%. You know, like, oh, I definitely, you know, I mean, they're talking about the Brother Man. It's like, you know, I think partly because of sports and, you know, Michael Jordan and other athletes, they see them all the time, they work in football and so forth. And this is the physicality, they just talk about being with the Brother Man. In fact, even higher, I'd say 70% at least.
Well, John, you know, Kim Kardashian is with Kanye West. So that's part of it. But we are kind of getting off topic. Tonight's show was about enlightenment.
Or endarkenment.
So can I read
there
two paragraphs to you guys?
Sure.
So I'm in an upward battle to get the public's attention because I'm pretty much losing the primary of my Duluth school board race due to a networking system of good old boys in the school board level.
Right.
So I'm going to change up. I'm going to become a game changer and make people appeal to the poor working class single parent role model such as myself. And I'm collaborating with somebody who's running against me, Charles, to make our candidacy more appealing collectively. So in the Republic, Plato paints a picture of ordinary people imprisoned in a shadow world cave, unaware of the true reality hidden from them. When a prisoner is released from the cave, he initially suffers from the sun's blinding brightness. Yet as his eyes adjust, he begins to see the truth. If he were to return underground to enlighten his former prisoners, they would not believe him, for they couldn't imagine a world beyond the shadows of the dominating existence. The allegory is a powerful metaphor for contemplating a divide between ignorance and enlightenment, between the visible world and the intelligible realm, and then it, blah, blah, blah. So what it goes on to say is only certain people can conceive of higher principles like wisdom, truth, and justice, while the rest of the world just imprisoned and can only see shadows, and their conceptions are blinded by what they think they see versus what they know. So is it possible to transform people? Because I'm running against it's not just about me, it's about the perception of the world. I'm running against someone who is 71. He's been a doctor and a PhD in education, and he's already been on so many volunteer boards and real boards, like, you know, like on the medical board at his hospital, blah, blah, blah. He's a retired doctor. What chance does a Nigerian social worker and a white female teacher have against this upscale doctor?
Okay, now, the upscale doctor is he is a member of the good old boy society, right?
Well, he is in the sense that four sitting school board members shut me and Charles Obigi, the Nigerian, out of the whole DF Democratic endorsement process. They had all their delegates there, and we were shut out.
Right. No, you have the voice right there. You have to publish that in the paper and over the internet or whatever to tell the exact story, the harm that you've had from this gentleman in this situation. That's how you have to do it, and you have to do it quick, fast, in a hurry, and concentrated. And the other thing is definitely his age. Bring that up as often as possible, because there's a term of 4 years. The average age of a person is, of a male, what, 72 years? So this gentleman is not going to be able to serve out his term, you know. And so that's what you bring up. That's how you overcome some of it. Also, your son.
It's a four-year term.
Right, and he's going to be 75 when he finishes that term. I don't think so. You know, he's going to have to give up the term, and this is what you write about. He's going to have to give up his term.
Well, he could endure it. Maybe he's in good health.
Oh, shut up, Jane. I'm telling you that the what you need to do as a stratagem, I'm not talking about actually. That man's probably going to live to be 105. But that's not the point for you at this point in your campaign. You've got to tell the public that this man ain't going to make it to the election. So why vote for him? That's what you. That's what your strategy is. You just asked your strategy.
He is giving you good strategy more than boring rhetoric. I'll give you a couple ideas. This is just off the top. Have Lolo like a DJ with chains, and then dress up like Moore's Day in the Time, and sing
okay,
School Board Love, Ole Ole O, right?
Ole,
and do a couple commercials. Or become Minnesota Viking Jane or something, and wear Minnesota, you know, jersey and show up at a lot of the sports bars and rally up the local, you know, like your person
right.
of the people kind of thing. The point is, I mean, go to popular stuff, popular places where your constituents will hang or would go to, even if it's the Costco, even if it's, you know, wherever you can legally distribute or promote yourself and work out the connection to, you know, you're going to make an appearance at the bookstore or something. And
I did. I'm giving a lecture tomorrow night at a coffee house called Perks Coffee House on Kenwood and Woodland.
Okay.
All
right.
Well, you've got to stick out. You've got to do at least, because it's still early. When is your election? I don't know.
The primary is in 2 weeks, and if I lose, I don't go forward.
All right. Well, then you.
How
in
about
2 weeks, you got to spend
Purple Jane?
4 days.
Wear purple, you're Purple Jane, and play Prince music as you're walking.
Well, guess what? I put up a homemade sign today because my real signs aren't coming till tomorrow, and I drove past there 6 hours later, and somebody took it down.
Right, that's normal.
Yeah.
That's a normal campaign strategy where you get your sign up, and your sign is gone. They're expensive, but the only way to do that is to chain them down.
There's a store that sells cannabis, you know, it's a medical store, and to promote it at the street corner, they have a mannequin, a nice busty mannequin, and with clothes, with a dress on, and then as time went by, they lower one side so it's half exposed. The point is, they get lots of attention. Now, you know, you don't want that kind of attention, but the point is, you want to be memorable wherever you show up. You want something catchy, something imaginative, creative, theme-wise, you know, something that people remember you, the hammer, you know, all week long. And that's the first thing that pops in their mind when they go to the polls, you know, a proper slogan, a phrase, dress.
Well, they had a candidate grid in the paper this weekend, and my picture and profile was on the top.
But probably if you wore a black eye patch and you were like the Viking barbarian chick, you know, running for office. I know I'm joking, but I'm just pointing is you visualize that and you go, oh, yeah, they would never forget you. Now, that would be a negative image. But if you could think of a positive image that burns your thought or your slogan or whatever, your message into their brains, then you've got something going.
Now, Don and John, based on what you guys saw in the news this week, what's the heaviest thing on your mind?
I'm still working on your campaign thing. Like, example, it could be like these
characters. Why would she interrupt you telling her best strategy?
Right, because she's ADD.
I feel strange about having the focus on myself.
She's ADD. Yeah, well, you have to have that to succeed.
I guess the thing is I'm going to be giving some lectures in a few weeks at a coffee house, and I'm going to demonstrate to people my educational prowess.
I'll give you an example. Like instead of having like a 15-minute speech and you're talking about the constituency and the adaptation curve of educational blah blah rhetoric. It's like it's like you have like say a big poster card thing, right? Like a poster board, 24x36, and it's got three monkeys. You know, hear no evil, see no evil. and, you know, whatever, you know, do no evil or say no evil. And, you know, you've got the names of your competition on the, you know, which monkey is this guy, you know, or whatever. But the point is, something simple, they go, a visual thing, that's when Ross Perot was so popular. He'd get out his little, he'd start marking on his marker board or his sketch paper and showing his pies, the different, you know, how money is spent and so forth. And it captured, you know, your mind. It's just like, I even if I'm not going to vote for him, I can't forget this guy. So I just think you need to kind of come up with a way of labeling or categorizing your competition so where people can identify with, you know, I don't want to vote for that guy. I want to vote for
Yeah, and you've got 2 weeks, so that means you got to get on a quick, fast, and in a hurry. And you can't let any – you really need to probably see if you can take a couple days off from work and really – I mean, this is only if you want it. This is what a campaign – this is what a person in a campaign, a candidate, has to do. They have to take time to go out to the populace and tell them why they want to run. They have to do that. And if you are not serious about winning, then, you know,
I talked to people in the grocery store this week, and I put signs, little signs everywhere, flyers. And
okay,
tomorrow
night,
our United States Senator is going to be at a book signing, and I'm going to go trash that later.
What, Klobuchar?
Yes.
Okay. So what you need
How
to do
really... How do
you
know Klobuchar?
I've seen Klobuchar. I've seen everybody. Keep quiet. We're on you now.
You're talking to a
that,
pro. He's a professional.
You're talking to a professional.
We have Al Franken and Al Franken and Amy Klobuchar as our senators.
Right.
I think you should have like a T-shirt with Brett Favre's face on it, and put "I'm so good, even Brett Favre threw a pass at me."
Oh, now that would be something of notice.
Why don't I put a T-shirt on that says "I'm so good, Adrian Peterson spanked me with a tree switch"?
I was getting to him next.
That would work. That would work, and made me bleed. You forgot to add that.
Jesus, Don.
That's all right. I know I make ladies bleed, too. But, you know, the bottom line is that you need to start doing something that's out of wackiness. And the first thing is to get on this guy's age. This guy is 71 years old, and you tell him he cannot serve out his entire term.
He's got to go down, Jane. He cannot hold an election.
An erection, huh? You were right both times.
Don, John and Don, I didn't tell you
yes.
the whole story.
No, you never do, but go ahead.
He has two kids in middle school. He had a later in life marriage.
Nothing
okay.
wrong with that.
Were you one of the women who was his baby mom?
No.
That'd be the rest of the
sure.
story.
Does this one end in the hotel room too?
Yeah, that's
an elevator.
Telling the whole story, Jay. You and three other girls. Just him.
He has a wife. Hello.
So
and now
what?
You're gonna
oh
ruin
my
ratings.
How do you think they make?
You're gonna ruin my ratings with this cheap talk.
That's right. We could protect
what,
our
what
candidate.
Ratings.
People
ratings
listen
of what?
From Duluth.
They do, oh, do they? I'm
yeah.
sorry for them. Anyway, but bottom line is that you've got options. Do something about it starting tomorrow. Next subject.
Okay, so
what was the next?
What have you guys seen in the news this week that floats your boat,
well,
for lack of a better word?
I'm working here in Reno, Nevada. We have a church, the Universalist Unitarians, and they put out a sign because they're feeling guilty because they, in the past, have been more or less sponsors of bigotry and racial hatred. So they're trying to make up for it. And they put out a sign this weekend, Friday, saying Black Lives Matter. This the next day they came by and the sign was, of course, desecrated and it said white. They X'd out the black and put in white.
Jeez.
So we've got a little bit of a problem here that we have to resolve concerning the populace and the small number of bigots who intend on, like in South Carolina, continue the Aryan message. So we've got that to deal with here. So that had nothing really to do with nationwide, but this is a big deal here right now.
Wow.
So that caught my attention. But the Texas police officer also caught my attention, and that's because people still don't understand the hurt that the blacks and minorities feel. You know, we feel an anger, but we can suppress the anger with our love for God and you know, country and everything else that we've developed. But in terms of the way that the white man has been treating us and sicking his police dog men on races is a travesty from day one. You know, the white man is a weak person. He's always hiding behind his power, which is, again, his dogs, his guns, and the badge, and whatever other law, the DAs, because the DAs are pretty much the most powerful people in the country.
What
does
the poor white woman hide behind?
The white women, they go to they go to the black men because they want to get away from the white man. They understand how evil the white man is. So that's why they
Jesus
are flocking.
Don.
What? This is all normal information nobody wants to share.
The white man is uptight. That's why they want to get away from him. Not because he's evil, but because he's emotionally uptight.
Honey. Anybody who worships, who prays to money over people is evil. I don't know where you're talking about. I don't know where you're coming from. You are so naive and depraved that you don't understand that this is a brainwashing because you are part of that culture. We've already been through this before.
So what
this
if I want a rich husband? Am I evil?
You're not evil for wanting a rich husband. You're evil for wanting rich. And then you don't really care about your husband. You can want him really if you love the man. You can want his money too. That's fine.
So it doesn't matter if he's black or white. Is he green?
And that's what.
I'm just saying that because I'm getting tired of the journey of having to struggle.
No, struggle is part of struggle is
yes.
Struggle is what the greed forces everyone to do. 1% in this country own 93% of the wealth. That means that you're not alone. You're not the only person in this country that's struggling, and nobody can feel sorry for you. Nobody can feel sorry for anybody, because that's the way it is. And like I said, I've got a son who's making six figures, and he's, you know, in terms of happiness, he's as happy as he's been in a long time or ever. But he's still got issues and problems that he worries about.
That's because he just got married and had a baby.
I didn't say that.
But he did get married and had a baby.
Right, and he's going to be 71 years old with a 20-year-old kid. You know, so he'll be 62.
Well,
did he marry a black gal or a white gal?
No. Right.
He went white.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the brothers are infiltrating taking all the white girls and leaving
right.
their sisters.
But that's exactly what I said, only in reverse. The white girls are going to the black men and the Hispanics because they realize the white man is evil. He is, you know, and
is
this is
John
something
evil?
That everybody knows. Everybody
I'm half
knows.
Evil.
He's half evil. You know, he's half evil.
You
the
don't
bottom
even
line
have,
is that,
I'm working on the other half.
No. You'll never achieve full evilness. Believe me.
How about you, John? You're the one who porked all those women in the past.
And I've got a half evil daughter. But, you know, the bottom
Which
line is
one?
That.
The younger?
The one who is in Los Angeles, still in Long Beach. And
oh, yeah.
So I'm just saying that as a continuation of the thought. But the bottom line is that there is a change on the horizon. Everybody just has to be patient until the real kings and queens retain their throne. And that, if you look at all history, that's who had the throne. The Egyptians,
I could go back for a while. Bring on the sisters. I'm cool.
You know what? I believe that a monarchy is a more stable form of government than a capitalistic democracy.
Well, we got black kings too now. Don't worry about it. We'll be back with black kings and black monarchies and black oligarchies and all that stuff. We're coming. You see where? Oh, that's the one. That's the story that's getting my attention. You see where all the African refugees are going into Hungary and Czechoslovakia and Serbia and Bosnia. They're running into those countries in droves. So in 20 years, Honus Popeski is going to be black. You're going to have all those Kowalskis, boy. They're going to be wondering what the hell happened.
They're going to have some great basketball Olympic teams, too, by the way.
There you go, by the way. The Polish will finally, they'll finally achieve their basketball stardom. This is the way the world is. This is the way the world should have been and will be again because, the Egyptians and all these people in history, these are your kings. We are your kings.
There's only going to be one major upset in the next world order, and that's the return of Jesus.
And Brazil is finally going to beat Cuba.
That's the return of Jesus Christ.
What about it? There's no return of Jesus Christ. Damn people. This idiot white boy on TV today comes up and says the good people must maintain the status quo because... What did he say? Because Jesus is no longer with us, so we have to do it ourselves or something like that. I listened to that. I almost died. Jesus walks with us. You guys, nobody studies this. Nobody knows what the Bible is. Jesus is with us all the time. And not only is he with us, but he is in us all the time. So how can this white boy say, he's stupid, stupid motherfucker. He says... because he is no longer with us. I couldn't say anything. I was speaking.
I don't think that's the right phrase for it, but John, there's going to be a final battle in Jerusalem, and all of mankind is pretty much killers. There's people being pushed out of Syria and into Turkey. And they don't have anywhere to live. There's people on boats with nowhere to land. There's Muslims that like to kill. There's white Europeans who like to maintain the status quo. The only ones who are really holy are the Scandinavians, like me.
Ooh, like you.
or Switzerland.
Right,
or
the
Switzerland.
Neutral countries that don't care about fighting.
Wow.
No,
yeah,
I was making a joke about the Scandinavians. There's,
I know she was.
A lot of people don't want war, but they're trapped in a situation where they're stuck in war. So,
The whole world is eternally at war. You don't have to worry about there are wars here and there. There are wars everywhere. Every country has a war going on in some form or fashion, whether it's civil war, whether it's a municipal set of wars,
or border wars,
familial wars, or border wars, or just all-out territorial wars. We're always in wars. That's why there will never be peace. That's why there will never be the end of activism, because there will never be peace in the world because the world is predicated on war. And I've mentioned it before. Keynesian economics, it's real simple. These guys know it, is that there's only two ways for a government to make money, guns and butter. That's it. and you can't make money, significant amount of tax money, without it. And these people, war is easier because it generates a lot more money a lot quicker. You can generate in 6 months five times the amount of weaponry from your corporations, from your manufacturers that sell at five times the cost, and you can produce them five times faster if you've got the infrastructure already in place.
You know, Don?
Yeah.
And John?
Mm-hmm.
The thing is I think you kind of have a narrow-minded view of the world, Don.
No, I do. You know why? Because the world is really, it's really more narrow than you think. This is one world order. We have already
it's black or white.
Maybe you should have gone to Europe for an internship in college or something like that.
Oh, well, no. Marquette was Europe for most black men. I'm telling you what. But, you know, no. Narrow is not, it's not narrow because in what I'm saying, there it encompasses everything. We just went over half the things. We went over war. We went over sex. We went over relationships. All of that is in the context of what I'm saying. All of it. So it's not narrow at all. This is just a huge situation that is really people are beating their heads against the wall because they are rejecting the true leaders of the world. Always have been. And the true leaders of the world are
Obama. Obama was a true leader, and he was rejected.
That's what I said about your. That's what I said about your political campaign, or not yours, but the one that we talked about, that the guy was running anyway. That you have to lose once or twice
right,
in order to understand.
The status quo is very entrenched in party politics, and I had to learn the hard way.
Right, and you still have 2 weeks to learn, so you might as well go on, get out there, take your lumps, and then in 17 or 20 or whenever, if you decide to run again, you'll understand that from this time until that time, you know, 17 or 20 or whatever, you've got some networking to do. You've got the major... coalition building.
Yeah, there's the guy who's running for school board 3 for the third time, and he covers the school board in the secondary newspaper in the city. And he talks about all the politics, and some people refuse to take him seriously because of his inflammatory statements towards people. Board members on the school board.
Exactly. Everybody's got them. They've got those people that go to city council meetings, school board meetings, and they're always saying something, and it always sounds crazy as fuck, but when you look at the intrinsics of it, it can almost make sense. I.e. Donald Trump.
The thing about it is, Don, is that this guy tells the truth, but he does go too far in explaining the truth, like calling the board member that people feel alienated about the Lone Ranger, and calling people names and, you know, using metaphors to describe their personalities.
Right, but one thing you have to realize too, you have to character assassinate, and the one who shoots first usually wins. If you wait to respond, then you look like you're defensive, and it looks like you're guilty. So
unless your programs or ideas are so exceptional that you don't have to, i.e. Bernie Sanders. But go ahead.
Yeah.
Right. He refuses to say anything bad about Hillary. And this week, Donald Trump assassinated Jeb Bush's character.
Well, Jeb Bush is as dumb as a block.
I wouldn't call him dumb, but I feel like he's kind of sincere in some ways.
Oh, he's a sincere dumb as a block mother. Okay, gotcha.
John, what's your opinion about Jeb Bush? Do you think he's just trying to run on the family name and think that'll be good enough?
I'm not sure what the IQ level is of a block.
Okay, all right. I'll give, a minus 10. So we'll give Jeb Bush a minus 11 because he's dumber than the block.
One thing that he has going for him, which is not a lot, but his money, connections, that kind of thing. So you kind of have to look too, Jane, is like, do you align yourself with money? What people do you know with money or power or clout that can move with you and for you and open up doors? And that opens up a lot of as far as your finance. You get a couple people with money that believe in what you're doing, and that changes everything. And you go, well, that seems kind of corrupt, kind of, not straight up the way I want to do things. It's like, that's how it rolls. That's the process. If you want to play the game, you got to play the game. You know, it's like everyone's dancing and taking their clothes off to some level. So if a person goes, I have my integrity, I'm not going to take my clothes off. It's like, well, it's a strip review, you know.
Right. So you better take your clothes off, or you know, it doesn't matter how much integrity that you got, you're still going out the back door.
Right. And it's okay, because as long as you stay within your, you know, you pick your parameters and you stay within the flow. It's kind of like this. You're on the freeway. You're going 35. Everyone's, you know, going 55, and the front runners are going 75 to 85. You got to get in the fast lane. And you go, well, I don't want to stick out that much. Okay, well, at least get in the middle where everyone's going 55 to 65 or 70, and you're okay if you don't want to stick out. But if you're going 35 or 45, you know, they're just running you over.
Yeah, the thing is I guess the two, let me just tie this in, the local to the national. I didn't realize politics was so jaded. Like, of course we all know
that. I've been trying to tell you that for a billion years.
Well, okay. Did you know that there's delegates in every state across the nation right now who've already handpicked whether they're going to go for Hillary or Sanders? There's people in the upper level Minnesota state government that's already chosen to be Hillary's backer.
And there's already of 20, you know, or however many presidential candidates, there's probably 10 or 15 others that would have run, but they already had someone sleep with them, and they took a picture, they've got a letter, they've got tape, you have something going on. It's like, you want to run, we got you. Because you wonder, how come someone isn't stepping up? Because, it's like what happened last time with the brother man that everyone loved, that, you know, had the flat tax idea. It's like, we're going to blow the whistle. And he's like, you know what? I like my wife and the quiet life I'm living. I'm going home, taking all my toys and going home. So you have to look at that reality of how it runs, the game.
Well, it isn't too. It might have been too much for me to bite off at this point in my life.
Right. Like to tell you the truth, you know, I'm all into honesty and objectiveness and purity and this and that, and I'm not a Clinton fan by any means. But to me, I could care less about her emails or what phone she was using. And I know they go, oh, national security. Okay, fine.
Yeah, but
what? They're all doing this stuff. It's like now, is she doing something illegal on it? Not just procedurally, but I mean, is she like ordering assassinations on, you know, or something like that? Then, okay, I have a problem. But it's like, what phone, what email are you using, all that stuff?
But that's the whole point, is that even though the government websites are probably easier to hack than Joe Schmoes, they want this confidential information only coming through their servers. And so what's happened is that she has apparently not done that. And so she has confidential information that could have been, especially the Republicans are worried about Benghazi. This information could have directly had an effect on when Anderson was attacked, when they were attacked in Benghazi. You know, that's what they're afraid of. That's why they have laws against using public domain servers for classified business.
Right,
so it's,
but
you know,
kind of
reason.
Going to that point, you know, Bill Clinton had the nuclear football and all the numbers of, like, what to call when nuclear attack, and he's losing them half the time. It's in his back pocket. You know, is it the pants that he had with Monica or where? Like,
that didn't happen until his second presidency.
It doesn't matter. That could have still been considered
his second
security.
He just wasn't up on his. He was up on a lot of things, but it wasn't the national security. Is I guess what I'm saying. You know, they're trying to get a hold of him, and they can't because he's banging Monica. You know, stuff like that.
He didn't bang her, John.
Well, he banged her.
They never had sex. He put a cigar in her.
And that's why he didn't get impeached, because he was able to do like Citizens United and obfuscate the entire country by saying he did not have sex with that woman. Okay, if I'm ejaculating on somebody's face.
He was trying to be like Obama. He pulled his troops out of Lewinsky.
Right. And he sure did. And the thing is that Lewinsky kept a couple bullets and kept a couple of armored tanks and went out and started attacking, you know, Israel. And Israel
she kept the magic bullet.
Yeah, well,
it was Linda Tripp's fault for tricking Monica into.
Oh, my God. Who cares about Linda Tripp? Linda Tripp
because
only
she
told
Monica
to keep
the dress. Lewinsky into telling her the truth.
No, the only thing Linda Tripp was not down there pushing Monica's head on his cock. Linda Tripp only said, "Hold on to the dress." That's all she said. That's all she told her. Hold on to the dress. That's it. Monica Lewinsky was in the East Room giving head. Monica, not no Linda Tripp.
Well, Bill Clinton shouldn't have done that when he was in office.
And to follow up with that point, for most people, if you're having sex with someone and it gets a little sloppy, a little messy, I think the first thing you do is you take a shower and clean up, or wash up, or a bath, or whatever, and do all of your business, and you take your clothes, right, and you throw it in the laundry, you get it clean, right? Who keeps?
No, but if I did Brittany, I wouldn't necessarily want to throw my clothes in the
mirror. Okay, well there you go.
I'd go out and buy a damn frame, and big enough, fold them up neatly, and put them in the frame, and keep them for about 200 or 300
years.
What if I did Brittany? Hell yeah!
You
have a special room.
Okay, maybe I did go a little far.
He'd call it the spear room.
The spear room. There you go.
Maybe
like
you're
it.
A trophy husband. You're looking for a trophy wife.
I am. I know I am. That's why I'm here. But the bottom line is what is going on with all of this stuff happens all the time.
All the time.
And it doesn't get published. It gets swept under the rug, and everybody's like Jane, can't believe it. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And these guys are doing all this crap, and they're getting away with it because they get people who are gullible like Jane, and making sure that they don't even understand what the potential answers are.
Right.
You know, and you got to freaking, the populace needs to know a little bit about what the answers are, potential answers are.
There's more stuff going down than Bill Cosby working pharmacy at Rite Aid at midnight. I mean, it's just,
there you go.
You're going to see it. You know, what you see is the tip of the iceberg, I guess is what I'm saying. So when someone goes, oh, boy, that came out really. But the point is, when you hear, like, say with Arnold, oh, he had a love child. It's like, yeah, and what else?
Right.
There's one gal he was fooling around with? You think there's one or two celebrities he was groping? It's like, no. Arnold was doing it all the time, all the place, everywhere. He had the power, and he rocked it. And then when you start going with Bill Cosby, it's like, well, we got, you know, one or two, we got 10, and we got 20. You know what?
Like,
I think everyone's mom is coming out now.
30. Yeah, he probably did his
mom. And counting.
Right. So we're talking about the fact, and nobody had said anything for 20 years. Now just now coming out. That's ridiculous.
So now when you say, boy, you know, him and Monica kind of did a this and a that, you think Monica was the only gal? You think Monica was the
but he was with Paula, too. Come on. He's with all those girls. But nobody
realized. How many of them said, you know, I'm not going to tell anyone. This is just boom, boom. And it's like the Mile High Club. It's once in a lifetime. It's the president. He's here this weekend. He's here in this town. He's here in this country. He's here, you know, I'm the sheik's wife. You know, hush, hush. Don't worry. I will help you, you know. Let me help you with your underwear. Go ahead.
Did you see the best news paper in the country, the Inquirer, had the news on that they were doing it, like you said, Mile High. When you said that, he would do them in the plane, and the witch call is right there with him. And I know that Hillary had a taste or two too. So
what you're saying is that he spent a lot of time in the cockpit.
Paula and the stewardesses spent a lot of time in the cockpit. He was in the cockhole. He was in the hold.
I'm putting you guys on mute.
Both of us? No. But,
you know, there's not sex in politics in Duluth.
Oh, yes, there is. Why do you think that 75... I think that 71-year-old man has a 10-year-old kid.
Okay, I have to tell
oh,
you guys.
Oh,
no,
thing.
We haven't even gotten to Jared yet.
I have
yet.
To tell you guys something.
Yes.
One of the board members' names is Judy Punkio. So
okay.
I said, whoever stole my sign, I'm going to Punkio A-double-S.
Yes.
But I said,
okay.
But instead I'll just let you live out the consequences of your action.
Ah, aren't you sweet? You're too damn sweet. That's why you're going to lose, loser.
But her real name is P-U-N-K-Y-O, Punkio.
And maybe
okay,
do the Jane, do the reverse. Instead of trying to say, I'm trying to win, and this, just say, vote for me. Vote for the loser. It's about time, you know. There's more of us than them. That's your slogan,
well,
you know.
That's close, but you don't want to say loser. You just want to say, okay, go with the because right now it's very popular to not be a career politician, and this
mm-hmm.
guy sounds like he is. So
uh-huh.
that's your end. You're not a couple career politician. He is, and you'll win. No problem, hands down.
And yeah, maybe show up and have a little group, you know, like one of those. You know, in the olden days, they used to have those wagon wheel things, and, you know, just say, you know, I'm not here for the gravy train. You know, have a little gravy train, a little horses set, something like that. Identify with something where people go, yeah.
You get whatever you eat at Maria's, huh? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. We love Maria. But just come up with something catchy, something that gives a visual picture that people can connect with, and I think you'll go 50 times farther than just having great ideas and trying to speak in a certain way. That's fine. But I think, yeah, be colorful. It's like you're entertaining kids. You know, if you think of it this way, you're a clown at the party. They want to see balloons. They want to see a trick or two. They want some smoke and mirrors. They want to disappear. You know, whatever. You make them laugh. Give them a dance. And you know, there's innovative, smart ways to do it. You know, you don't have to be stupid, but just be catchy and witty, and I think it'll serve you well.
Okay.
Well,
good,
I did give a
good.
Passionate speech at the DFL endorsement. I just didn't win. I've accepted it, and I'm going to move on.
Okay.
You guys, I can't stay on the line much longer. I'm having some difficulty.
Would you be mad at me if we voted for your competition, like if I got an address and then
you
registered?
You can't, because you have to live
you're
in
not
the
a member of the, You're not a
you
member of
the district. You have to live in the
community.
District.
Can I look up a phone book of dead people and try to...
Yeah, you could do that now.
What you could do is write letters at duluthnews.com and write a letter of an endorsement for me. Tell people how you know me. Tell them only good things and why you would vote for me.
Oh, man.
There you go. Sounds
That's a lot of work.
And start writing now. And you'll be done by next November.
Just my grit.
But that's all right. You'll have won the primary because you took my advice and told that old man to sit his butt down, just like our Michelle Fiore told the people, sit your ass down. Right in the middle of it, and she had to apologize. But, you know, we're in Nevada out here. We say shit like that. But the bottom line is that you're okay right now. You just got a little hard work to do. You might need to take a day or two off and campaign exclusively.
Or how
and then
about,
you'll have enough.
Yeah, you could tell them that you know CPR, and if your opponent happens to have a heart attack or, you know, some health problem,
there you, go.
You can resuscitate them and bring them back.
Or even say you have 911.
911.
You have 911 capability on your phone, and when
right.
he falls out, you'll have an opportunity to go catch him.
There you go.
So these are all very good points that you have to take. But what was your other points that you wanted to cover before you guys start falling out? Because, Jane, you sound tired.
My point
is she's
guess,
asleep right now.
No, guess what I was doing while you guys were talking?
You were sending a letter.